But now I don't see those gobbles and cubs. I don't hear the blues anymore.
Rough Trade is giving away a third of the first 3 months of the Rough Trade Club plus new music membership exclusively to 101 Part-Time Jobs listeners. Become a member of Rough Trade Club New Music and you'll receive the Rough Trade Album of the Month straight to your door every month on exclusive vinyl pressing with exclusive bonus material. Club members have received exclusive pressings of albums from Sufjan Stevens, Sprints, The Last Dinner Party, Julie Byrne and Over Mono, just to name a few, this past year alone. Sign up using the promo code CLUB101POD and you'll get the Rough Trade Album of the Month, English Teacher's excellent debut album, This Could Be Texas, on exclusive Galaxy Gold for a third of the usual price. Here's English Teacher on a recent episode of 101.
How many opportunities do you get to write a debut album and have all of this, you know, support behind us? I don't know, I really like the idea of holding the bar as being like classic songs.
You only get one shot at a debut.
Don't want the album of the month but still want all the benefits? Sign up to the standard tier using Club101Pod and you'll still get the first month free. You'll also get free shipping on all orders, 10% off the bar and on secondhand vinyl in-store, and exclusive access to sold-out Rough Trade events. So don't hang around. Go to roughtrade.com/club and sign up with the code CLUB101POD. That's CLUB101POD, and claim money off the album of the month, English Teacher's This Could Be Texas, today. This offer's available to UK residents only. Do you play in bands? I did for the longest time. And I wish that I knew that DistroKid was a thing. I don't even think it existed back then. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads. And artists keep 100% of your royalties and earnings. 1 million+ artists rely on DistroKid to get their music on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all the major streaming services. When you get DistroKid, you can see a DistroKid bank and withdraw your earnings. You get notified when you've earned royalties and you can withdraw via the app. And you can even check your streaming stats on Spotify and Apple. Get 30% off your first year on DistroKid by going to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. 30% off for your first year. That's not bad. We know it's a tough world out there. Why don't you make it easier for yourself? And to get 30% off that free year as an artist where you get 100% of your royalties and earnings, go to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. All right, stay with me. I'll be right back after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to 101 Part-Time Jobs with me, Giles Bidder, and I've got Ty Vaughan on the line here from Broadway Cools, who have just released their new album, Sad in the City, out now on Red Scare Industries. And I've got to say, it's their best record. You need to go check it out if you haven't. It's incredible. I love it. Mine and Ty's bands toured together a couple of years ago, just before they took their six-year break. And I wanted to catch up with him and see what he got up to over that time. And he's got some stories. There's a lot of stuff that I didn't know about him. It opened up a narrative about Broadway Cools that I didn't know about. In some cases, they're quite emotional and personal stories. I'm glad we did it. I'm glad I got to... I feel like I know Ty a lot better now, actually. And I'm glad that I can share that. Sad in the City is out now. It's their best one. I've already said that. East London Signature Brew have been brewing music-inspired beers and supporting live music since 2011. You may know them from their collaboration beers, brewed with the likes of Mastodon, Idols, Slaves, Mogwai, Enter Shikari, and loads more. And as a coveted listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off all their beers by visiting their website, signaturebrew.co.uk, making an order, and then using the code 101podcast, that's all capital letters, at checkout. So do that and enjoy. All right, this is Ty Vaughan from Broadway Cools giving us some good stories. Cheers for listening. You got a new email address, BroadwayCoolsNW. I shouldn't say, well, you know.
Whatever. We needed a fresh start, so we got a new one.
Right, and speaking of fresh starts, it feels like a fresh start for you, you know, with Red Scare and the new record, like even the sound of it sounds fresh.
Yeah, thank you.
For real?
We took time off. Honestly, it did kind of feel like we were just starting a new band sometimes, but just because of the time away. But it was, I don't know. It's always been Josh and Adam and I since we were like teenagers with some small breaks, you know, but we've been writing together forever. So,
and that's why I thought that's why you are such a great guest for this is because, I mean, obviously it's about part-time jobs and all that shit, but I kind of use that as an excuse to talk to people about, I suppose, the reality. Do you know what I mean? The offstage stuff. And you're a great band for that because I hope this isn't rude saying this, but you know, it felt like with the first record, you went through the system a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It was a huge learning experience for sure. I think what you're referring to is just like the whole music industry, that system. Mm. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. Okay.
Like toured with Cobra Starship and Alkaline Trio and there was that pop punk bump.
Yeah, for sure. Before that we had just mostly been playing like hardcore shows on the West Coast of the United States. And then we got really lucky where Adeline's got involved and we got, you know, things we had never had before, like a booking agent and resources, like that kind of stuff. So we experienced that. That was wild. I mean, it was hard because before that we had only toured with friends and then it really started to feel like a job and you realize all the job like things that went along with touring and playing music. Yeah.
When Great Cynics had, we had an agent, like a well-known agent for a hot minute and it was great. It got us onto like Reading Festival. You must know about Reading and Leeds festivals, right?
Yeah. That happened for us 1 year too. And it was really, I'm not like complaining about those experiences cause that was wild.
It's just different. And I think, you know, I felt like I was pretty clued up at the time in the sense that like, you know, I felt like I'd made some mistakes at that point and I was trying to be band smart. And then it just fucking caught me by surprise. We got an agent and I thought, oh, that's it. I don't have to care about shows anymore. Whereas the reality was, of course, you got to care about that stuff. Of course, you got to be hands on.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Sometimes we found out, though, that because of where we came from, where it was pretty much a DIY world, like our hands on approach that we wanted when we wanted to be hands on, that wasn't really welcome in some, you know, in some circumstances. So there's these weird walls that get put up, you know, especially when you're, you know, your band isn't getting any bigger. You just have different representation. And so like you still want to play some of the same venues or whenever you go to a specific city, you want to play with the same promoters you've been working with. And now you'd be like, oh yeah, you got to talk to this third party, you know, and you can't talk to us anymore directly. It's just a strange way to do it.
It's interesting you say, you know, your band's not actually getting bigger. You're just getting a team around you. And that doesn't, you know, by any means mean that you're bigger, but sometimes it feels that.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like when it doesn't happen, you're like, well, why isn't it happening now? Because we have all this, you know, the pieces in place. Like, what the hell's going on? It's just like a huge, weird, you know, it's when you have a team of people working for you and it's hard to communicate. You know, some people think they know what's best for the band. Some people, you know, don't want to hear what the band has to say in certain places. We got lucky where we never had to really battle for anything. You know, when we deal with the fest, for example, like we go to, you know, the fest in Florida, like we've always been able to just talk to Tony and do that no matter who was on our deal, you know, at the time. But yeah, you know, you hear the horror stories about how bands can't even communicate with the ones they need to anymore. And it really has an impact on a record cycle. Or
it's like the classic stereotypical thing to happen at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like Against Me, and like obviously a long time, well, quite a few decades, a couple of decades before that, like Replacements. And like I read Trouble Boys not too long ago, and that was so interesting hearing Paul Westerberg and Tommy Stinson being like kind of unprofessional. but obviously it was a completely different time back then. Are you a big Mats fan?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were lucky enough to see them when they came through, I guess it was just a couple of years ago, when they played Portland. And that was awesome. It was incredible. I mean, I heard that the Seattle show was totally different the night before. I heard that that Paul never came out of a tent that was set up on stage, like a pup tent he had set up on stage. He just never came out of that. But the Portland show, they were rocking. It was awesome.
So around that time, like going back to the Adeline thing and playing like hardcore shows, I could only presume, you know, you were pretty, you and your friends are pretty similar in the way you just kind of be working hustles and then playing gigs when you can, like We Jam Econo style.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I've always worked like in the service industry, you know, like pizza mostly is my game. And I always just found jobs that let us go on tour. Josh and Adam are both like entrepreneurs. They have always been their own bosses, which has been really cool for band schedule type things. You know, like Josh owns a screen printing shop and Adam owns a small construction company where he just like builds, you know, anything you need for anybody. So it's great. We have all these cool resources for, you know, the band. With Josh being a screen printer, we've never had to go into crazy debt to a merch company or anything like that.
It's so easy to get into debt playing in bands.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we do anyway. I can't imagine if, you know, if Josh didn't print all of our merch. And yeah, it's tough, dude. Like, that's pretty much, I don't know if I ever told you that that's kind of like why Broadway Calls started in the first place, is because we were already in debt with our previous hardcore band. And we had a van that we had bought. It was like a year old van. It was way out of our price range, but we thought we were going to be touring constantly. And so we needed this van. And then we did one full US tour and the band was kind of falling apart. So Josh and I didn't really want to stop touring and playing music. So we started Broadway Calls and booked a West Coast tour so we could keep making van payments.
Excellent. What was that hardcore band? I've forgotten.
It's called Countdown to Life.
Right. And you were doing stuff, right? I mean, you were touring quite hard.
We were on the West Coast of the US. Yeah, we did that quite a bit. We did that the whole West Coast loop, which is like you start in the Northwest where we're from and you head down California out through Arizona and up through, you know, Utah, Colorado and home. And then, you know, we do that a lot. And we did one full US tour with a band called Where Eagles Dare from Arizona. And that it was just a cold, miserable November, early December tour. And, you know, we just couldn't. And by the end of that, we just knew financially there's no way we could keep doing what we were doing. You know,
in Countdown for Life to Life, were you meeting people that you'd later like rekindle or like keep your friendships with in Broadway Calls and work with?
Absolutely. Yeah. That was all we knew were like West Coast hardcore bands when we started Broadway Calls. So that's who we toured with. We went out with this band Daggermouth from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That was our first tour. It was with them. We kind of did the Western US.
That's perfect for you. That's perfect for the sound of Broadway Calls and that time.
It was awesome. And we didn't really know what to expect. You know, and we were usually the only band that sounded like that on these shows that would sometimes have like seven or eight bands. It would be like all like a little hardcore fest, you know, especially in California. And it went over really well and it was awesome. And then like later that summer, we did the full US with a Redding, California band called Set It Straight. They're like a straight edge hardcore band, pretty big on the West Coast at that time. And, And that was like a 2-month tour. We just went all over the US and ended back home in California. And then we pretty much went right into the studio and recorded our first record that September.
It sounds so tight, that record. And of course, it goes without saying that production magic can happen from bedrooms now. But what was it, 2006, 2007?
Yeah.
That record for me was so instant, man. I listened to that record every day for a long fucking time. It sounds tight, that record, you know?
Thank you. Yeah, we were definitely, you know, we had just been playing every day for several months. So I remember that one's like got a little stressful in the writing phase towards the end, because I feel like we were just touring constantly and hadn't really got together to whip up a lot of new songs. And then it all came together really fast.
You know, that sort of tail end of the record kind of goes like rock, goes like alt rock.
Yeah. Well, that's what we joke about quite often when we talk about that record, is like, I think it has like 14 songs or something. And we put everything we had on that record, including a cover. Like, we didn't edit ourselves at all. You know what I mean? we were looking back on it, we may have approached it differently. I don't know. We just wanted to put every song we had written on a record, and that's what we did.
Well, I think sometimes you can hear that fearlessness in bands.
Yeah. 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 That's cool. That's cool that you get that impression, because a lot of people, especially, I feel like, you know, it's a lot to ask people to listen to a whole record nowadays.
The landscape is so different now to them, you know, what it was for your last record and then the one before that. And, you know, throughout your whole career, I feel like the landscape's kind of changed pretty fucking rapidly.
Definitely. Yeah. And you know, the fact that we took some time away, a lot of time away, a lot has changed since our last record, which was in 2013. And, yeah. You know, when we were approaching this record, we had talked about breaking it up into a couple EPs, because we didn't know if that was the better way, if that was how people wanted to listen to music nowadays. You know, we thought maybe, hey, people just want things in like shorter bursts instead of a full record. You know,
and people do that, like Hayley Williams done it, and she did it pretty well, I thought.
Yeah, it works for a lot of people to just put out singles, you know.
Right.
And there was a lot of discussions with Red Scare and just with us amongst in the band. And once we recorded the album, we knew that it should all belong together. You know, it wasn't a good move to break it up. We were very, you know, it doesn't make any sense to put a record out really when you can't go play shows and promote it. But lyrically, this record is pretty dark. And when I think I approached Toby at Red Scare like in late April about maybe changing the date of the release.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, dude, like the lyrics on this record are too relevant to what's going on. Like if we don't put this out right now, like, you got to put it out right now, basically, is what he was saying. You know, that was his opinion. And I think that, you know, obviously we agreed in the end, and I'm glad it's coming out this Friday, even though we can't put it out in a traditional sense, you know.
I think people who buy Red Scare records trust Toby, trust the label, him and Brendan.
Dude, I get that too. Absolutely. Like there is a special like vibe around that label. and we're really lucky to be part of it now. Like, I mean, hopefully we've been welcomed in amongst the Red Scare fans, but like, dude, like they're a great organization there for sure.
I went through so many ups and downs with Great Cynics. You know, the mm-hmm. goods were good, the bads were like fucking awful, you know. And I wonder if that's happened to you over the years.
Oh, dude, absolutely. I mean, when we put out that last record, Comfort Distraction, that was bad times in my head. And when we toured with you guys and Narwhals, that you know, like that was awesome. First of all, that was a killer tour. I had
it was hard though.
It was hard, but I should have been in a different headspace. I was in a very, very, I was in a very bad spot then. And, I don't know if I've ever talked to you about that, but that was really rough. And I'm sorry about that, 'cause I feel like I came off pretty rough that whole tour, like the grumpy old man, even though I didn't want to be, you know.
I feel exactly the same. I feel that way about so many tours. Don't apologize.
Yeah. It's just, it was a cool experience though. Like that tour, and it, you know, it was just rough in my head. But yeah, that whole record cycle, I would say, was pretty short for us. We did like one full US tour and then did that one with you guys. And then we went down to Mexico for something really quick, like, you know, a 5-day trip. It was beautiful and fun. And for the most part, like all the shows on that tour were pretty cool. You know, of course, there's some duds every once in a while, but it is what it is. And after that, it was pretty obvious that there was not a whole lot of gas left in the tank, you know, for the momentum of the band at that point. And like, I just knew I couldn't keep touring like that. I wasn't happy. Like, it wasn't, you know, I should have been happy. That tour we did with you guys were, that should have been a very happy experience on paper, you know, but I needed to get my head straight. So we just took some time off, and I worked at a brunch restaurant in Portland for like 6 years, and just did a totally different lifestyle, you know, than being a touring band. And it was really cool and really necessary.
You got to remember that we're still young, and like, it feels like we've experienced, you know, anyone who's in their 20s might feel like they've experienced so much. And you can go through a bad breakup or a family thing or a friend thing or anything. And I think it's so easy to feel like giving up, and remembering that there's so much left to do and it's never too late to change. Those two things, I think, have helped me, you know, especially the second bit. You know, it's never too late to change and try something new.
Dude, it's never too late to change. And like, just, it's, you can never stop learning. That's the thing that's really been, I try to like tell myself every day, like, you know, you just gotta, don't be afraid of like learning something new and having to change your perspective on the world, you know. That's gotta always keep going, because, and if more people did that, we'd be in a way less of a tight spot, you know.
And it's hard to get to that point, especially when earlier on in your musical career, you know, you kind of, you made your own luck and did something pretty cool pretty early on. That's always going to be tough to follow.
Yeah, for sure. We got so lucky. We got to do so many cool things. You know, when I think about it, we were from this tiny ass town in Oregon where we had literally one stoplight, you know, and we made it out of there and got to go do some awesome things together. Josh and I graduated together in the year 2000 and never went to college or, you know, university or anything like that. We just went straight out on tour. And so, yeah, we got really fucking lucky. And it is hard to come back after time off and like wonder if anybody is still interested, you know, or wondering if we can even still make a good record, you know, like we, something that we really are proud of. But, you know, at this point, Josh is such a pro when it comes to all things music. He wouldn't let us put out a bad record, you know.
So it's good to have that trust.
It is, dude. I mean, I've been writing songs with him since we were 14 or 15. So it's, and Adam's been playing bass with us in one form or the other since we were all teenagers or early 20s. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of trust there. And getting back together to make this record, honestly, was the easiest record to make than out of all of them, as far as I'm concerned. I felt I had like a lot more support from those guys, lyrically, you know, like when I was writing lyrics, and just in all aspects, you know, I would bring a verse and a chorus to practice, and then we would really fucking hammer those parts out for days or months if we needed to. And it was cool. It was a really fun process this time around.
So lyrically speaking, it's pretty easy to get. I feel like it's pretty common for everyone to kind of get into their own routine, and something that works one time doesn't necessarily work next time. Do you know what I mean? And that can be like a frustrating process. What's the last decade and a half been like for you in terms of writing lyrics, and how easy it comes or how hard it comes?
I think if lyrics came easier to me, we would have a lot more songs. You know what I mean? Like I don't have a bunch of songs sitting around, you know, like I just have the ones that most people hear. And it's because, yeah, lyrics are fucking difficult. I've always had a really hard time. I really want to, you know, sometimes they come really easily. Sometimes one line will come and then I just build around that for a song. Mm. That's usually what happens. Usually it's just like a line that I like, and I'll build around that, and I'll grab a melody and a guitar after. Sometimes the lyrics come very, you know, when I'm in the studio, like very last. So
it's something that you're so good at is the vocal melodies. You've got like a real specific style that it just kind of, it sits in the pocket, is the phrase I feel like producers would say.
Oh, thank you, man. I mean, melody is what I go after first if I can. Yeah, that's always really important. That's what catches me and attracts me to songs usually.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Do you like driving and writing, or is it like getting the public transport? Like, when do you find yourself? Are you a 3 a.m. ideas person?
No, especially when I think back to our first record, and a lot of ideas come when I'm at work, when I'm doing something, you know, when I'm like just rolling out pizza dough, or like,
you're being incredibly on brand here, Ty.
When I'm not, you know, and I'm not like, when I'm not listening to music, when I'm just zoning out, thinking of something else, usually a melody will pop into my head then. And then it's a pain in the ass because I have to either try to remember it or hum it into my, you know, voice memos on my phone so I don't forget it for later.
It's so funny. Ideas do come just when you're not thinking about anything at all. And you try to get back to that point. And you can't if you try. If you try, it doesn't work sometimes, you know.
No. There's a lot of lost ideas floating out there. And what's cool, though, is with having an iPhone in your pocket, like you can, when you can record those ideas, I have like hundreds of just little melodic clips in my phone of me humming while I'm driving or something. And
yeah,
and I did revisit a few of those to make this record for sure. And it worked out. It's pretty sweet to be able to have that resource nowadays.
I'm pretty unembarrassed of walking home in the nighttime and just kind of singing into my phone and not really caring who hears.
That's good. That's good, man, because you don't want to lose those ideas. This sucks to lose a good idea.
And I think you got to push yourself out of something, you know, get yourself out of the comfort zone. You know, what stereotypical bollocks, but.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, usually I'm not comfortable when I'm at work. I'm usually pretty miserable. So I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go.
So when you started working at the brunch place, you know, when Broadway Calls were taking that time off and you were going through, you went through a bad time. Was that a dip that came back up pretty quickly? I mean, how long were you kind of feeling like, in what kind of sense were you feeling bad?
I was very depressed. I think in the sense of where things that should be making me happy weren't on a very, you know, on a daily basis. You know, going back to that tour, that's a great example of it. You know, it should be when I'm hanging out with my friends in Rome playing a cool show that I didn't expect anybody to be at, you know, and it's amazing. But then I just downed two bottles of wine that night, not really in celebration. I tell myself it was because of celebration, but it was really just because, like, fuck, I just want to go to sleep. You know what I mean? So it's like, so it was just that. It's depression, and it didn't, you know, it doesn't go away. I still feel it now. It's just during those years away when I could focus on going, you know, sleeping in the same bed every night and going, having more of a routine than being on tour. I took the time to like go talk to a therapist and just work a lot of stuff out that needed to be talked out. And that was awesome. And, you know, just focusing on health in general, mental and physical, because definitely treat my body like shit while I'm on tour. So, yeah.
And those are two opposite worlds, aren't they? Like, I'm the same. Dude, since I stopped touring, I loved getting the jobs. I loved getting fired from those jobs. I loved getting more jobs. You know, I loved fucking up at home, having a place that's not too expensive and hanging out with friends. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things for me was being like, nah, I don't want to go out tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
Having the freedom to say that.
So nice. It's so nice. And, you know, when I started working at that brunch spot in Portland, I found like a whole new like set of friends in Portland, which is not something I ever expected to happen. You know, you get to that kind of point where you kind of think you just know everybody you're ever going to know, you know? And that wasn't the case. And that was a big eye opener too, you know, because I was like, damn, this is so great, because I'm meeting a lot of different kinds of people that I'm not exposed to at pop punk shows, you know? No, it was really good. It was really good time away. And I know Josh and Adam did the same thing, as far as they just focused on, you know, they have families and they have a lot. That's priority, you know, like families first always. So it was a really good time for everybody the last few years.
I wonder if any of those feelings come from like, so you start Broadway Calls after your last, you know, the hardcore band before that. The thing does really well. You as a person, you're synonymous with your band. Like, that's your identity. And then when that starts being something that's not fulfilling, that's confusing.
For sure. Yeah. That was a huge part of like why I was like just spiraling downward. I was like, this doesn't feel like, you know, I didn't know where I was supposed to be. I didn't know where I was going. Yeah. A lot of uncertainty at that time.
Hanging out in Portland, I mean, everyone knows it as, I've never been there, but I've seen Portlandia, which I feel like you probably hate me for saying that right now. But it feels like, you know, a town of opportunity in terms of creativity.
Yeah, for sure. There is a lot. There was, you know, up until this year, of course. There was a lot of venues. There were so many different scenes. There were so many different punk scenes, you know, which was awesome. There was like, there was just punk and hardcore scenes that I didn't even know about. And it was great to, you know, discover those.
It's funny. It's the same for me in London. There's a bunch of, you know, crusty scenes. Even on my road, there's a squat where there are gigs happening, and I've discovered bands who've been around for ages and I've just heard about them last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, this is cool. Fuck yeah. You know, feel 18 again and being like, what is this strange, exciting new world?
Absolutely, dude. I still get excited about new hardcore bands if they are, you know, something new and exciting. But there's all kinds of other punk and weird indie band stuff that happens that's exciting and it's cool. It's a cool city. It's just there's not a lot of all ages venues. You just got to play 21 up shows, but that's
right.
That's just what it is. There's a lot of the cool venues are gone that we grew up with.
Have you bumped into Hutch Harris yet?
I used to serve him. He used to come into my restaurant and say, yeah.
Yeah. Did he know Broadway Calls? Did you chat?
No, I never tried to talk to him about band stuff. I just poured his coffee.
So they're kind of one of those funny bands, because they kind of had from a British point of view perspective, they're kind of on their own. I mean, they've got the Sub Pop vibe, of course, but they're kind of on their own in terms of, you know, scenes, I suppose.
I agree. Yeah. They did their own thing whenever they wanted to. They would play a show in Portland and it would be, sometimes it'd be massive and sometimes it would be like just a couple hundred people. It was weird. They did kind of go through their own like phases, I think, depending on what record they were promoting at the time. You know what I mean? But yeah, I loved the Thermals. They were a great band.
This new record, I mean, did you kind of loop back to, did you go away from pop punk for a few years? in those 6 years?
As far as listening to or writing or
listening to and writing, and kind of like I sort of mentioned earlier, you know, how much you identify with your band.
Did you
step away from that for a bit?
I guess so. You know, I didn't write anything. So I didn't write any Broadway Call songs for years, probably 3 years. I didn't. Yeah. And so.
And it's got to be stressed that that is such a long time, given your whole half your life before that.
Yeah. Given the history of the band, for sure. And yeah. And exactly. It's just all musical history in my life. I just didn't really. But I was still involved with music. I just didn't write any like lyrics. So Josh and Adam during that time, they started a country band called Wonderly Road. And it's so good. Like they started with Robert, who's Josh's brother, who played second guitar on first Broadway Calls record. So it's like those guys, and Adam plays bass in it too. So like they have this killer country band. They recorded a whole record. It's not out yet. I don't know when it will be. They have a single out you can find on Spotify. Really good shit. And they're called Wonderly Road. And then, so I joined, I just started a band with some of my best friends from Portland. And we were a hardcore band. I just played guitar. And we were called Dead Tropics. And we have an EP that we recorded with Jack from Comadre. And
love that band.
Yeah, it was awesome. The Comadre is so good. I was just listening to them last night.
That's my main memory from the first fest that I went to. Because I saw them in one of the garages and then kind of bumped into them, two of the guys in that band, and just had this wild, you know, when you're 18 and you have this wild night with like people you don't know.
Yeah.
That was one of my nights like that.
That's what the fest was all about. That's like what I remember about like the first few fests was just like, who the hell am I hanging out with right now? It doesn't really matter, I guess. I'm having a good time.
And so it came together quite quickly, this record then.
In a sense, yeah. Josh started talking to me about writing songs again a few years ago. And I think when I look back through my phone to like the first idea demo that I had recorded of a song that ended up being on this record, it's probably from like 2016, somewhere in there. But we didn't really start writing hard until like early last year, I'd say, like early 2019. Late 2018, we started getting together more regularly. And like last year, 2019, I quit that brunch spot the first day of the year, pretty much. I had been there for 6 years. I moved way out of town with my wife. And
you're married.
I got married. Yeah, got married.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
When did that happen?
That happened 2 years ago. I met my wife while I was serving her brunch. And then I saw her at a show that my friends were playing at a bar that doesn't exist anymore, and had a conversation with her there. And that was like the first. So I like met her because I was working, you know what I mean? So I have no regrets of taking time off with this band and going to find a job at this brunch spot, you know?
Right.
And so I quit that job because I had just been there for a long time. We wanted to move out of town. We did. And I ended up becoming I don't know what you call them over there, but we call them like a mail carrier, a mailman, or a post.
Yeah, postie. Postman.
Postie. Yeah, okay. I wish we were called posties over here. But I did that for most of last year. And that was rough. That was a crazy eye-opening experience. That was a really difficult job.
Have you read Post Office?
Yeah, I read it when I was a lot younger, and I want to reread it now that I've lived it for 9 months. But
that's a job of routine, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's like sometimes a 6 day a week job, and you're there at the post office at 6 or 7 a.m. depending on when the manager, which is called a postmaster, which is really funny. The postmaster runs the post office and tells you when to be there.
That's the Gmail. That's the Gmail knockback thing, isn't it? 404, postmaster says, fuck you, wrong email address.
Yeah, exactly. So they tell you when to show up. You get there, and like the first 4 hours, you're in a little like cubicle sorting mail, basically. You have all this mail stacked up. and you kind of put it in order of the route that you deliver it on in these little tiny slots in this cubicle that surrounds you. Once that all the mail is up, then you take all the mail down from these slots, organized in these tubs in the order that you're going to deliver them on your route. And then you load up your truck and you get out on the road and you go do that for like the rest of your day, which sometimes can be, depending on how much mail you have, it's like your day starts at 6 a.m. And sometimes my days ended at like 9 p.m. because...
What?
Yeah, because it's pretty fucked, you know, like when you... I don't know. We had a lot of problems in my post office, and that's why I ended up quitting. I knew that one of the reasons I knew that I wouldn't be able to tour or promote this record at all if I was working there, because they weren't ever going to give me any kind of time off. And so I just ended up getting out of there for that reason. But a lot of it was also just because it's pretty rough. There's a lot of problems at my office that weren't getting solved, incompetent, just like weird, like, one of my coworkers and I were getting arrested for like stealing mail and like doing all this weird stuff because we deliver people's pills, you know, like that's a big problem. Like meds.
No way. Stolen.
Yeah. And so
you Americans and your pharmaceuticals.
I know. Yeah, dude, I would deliver all kinds of crazy shit. I would deliver right-wing propaganda on a daily basis, like crazy stuff from the Trump administration to these, you know, so I knew everybody on my route that was just like a wild right-wing nut, you know. And then I knew, you know, like I've delivered live chickens, like live chicken, little baby chickens.
Oh.
That I've delivered ashes, like people's cremated ashes. You know, it's just like, wow. All kinds of wild stuff. It's a crazy job. And I around August of last year, we had our recording scheduled for November, and I was like, okay, I gotta get out of here. So I quit last August.
Speaking of post, have you ever delved into the dark web?
No, I don't. I've read some articles about what it is, and like, you know, it's like where like hitmen advertise themselves and shit, but I don't know even right. How to access it.
I'm intrigued. More into the, you know, more into the fun side, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of like accidentally accessing it and then just getting an FBI raid at my door.
Well, you know what happens every time that I've tried to figure it out twice. And obviously the first thing is to get a VPN, which are like completely legal things,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Do the firewall so that you can, no one can trace wherever you are. IP address sorted, everything else sorted. And I keep on, both times I did the thing where I signed up to a free for a week, but, you know, put in your card details, obviously, because you're totally going to forget. And then you get charged 30, 40 quid. Happened to me both times. Many times that I actually succeed in accessing the dark web.
So I was just getting VPN money. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the government has all of it.
Have you considered, I mean, it's all the rage, microdosing?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know how to go about starting to do that. I haven't really looked into it, you know, but I would like to. I mean, so we've been taking this little dropper, I don't know how to explain it. But yeah, it's a mushroom
oil.
Yeah, exactly. You just put it under your tongue, and been doing that every day for a while now, and that's been pretty great. But you know, you don't feel like you're doing drugs at all, and it's just like a morning routine. You just do it before you start, before you drink your coffee or, you know, tea,
right.
If I was over there. But you just do that, and then I don't know, I think it, I hope it helps. We're doing it, you know, so it's I've never really thought of it as microdosing, I guess, but I guess that's what it is.
You wouldn't know how you felt otherwise. I mean, that's kind of one of the fucked up things about being a human, is that you can't really tell how exactly you feel right now.
Yeah. I know. You're just comparing everything to everything you felt before.
Yeah. And that's hard when your kind of job is creating.
It is. I was nervous about if anybody was going to give a shit. We were writing songs. Well, that was one of the reasons I didn't write songs for a long time. It was because I just felt like, what's the point? The world is ending. The world's screwed. Like, you know, especially in the last couple of years, I was just like, damn, like, what is the point of making a Broadway Calls record, you know? And I think that that Josh talked me out of that, basically. And, you know, listening to other people's conversations. I remember Tom from the Menzingers and Matt from the Sidekicks on Tom's podcast had a great conversation about how there is room for people, you know, there's room for bands. I just kind of felt like there wasn't really room for bands like ours anymore. I just was like, we don't need to be putting out music right now, but I got talked out of that, and I'm glad I did.
Do you know what I think applies to that so hard is, to quote Tim Armstrong, it starts and ends with you, or is it Lars that sings that? Because it really does. If you do something from excitement, other people get excited by it.
Right.
And that's hard. Don't get me wrong. That's fucking hard. It's like pretty tough to get yourself into that spot, especially, you know, when you're down the road of what you're doing. Because one of the things about punk rock is that it's like, it's instant.
Absolutely. Josh, you know, he basically was like, why wouldn't we do this? You know, like, why aren't we doing this? We know how to, we're good at it, and it's fun. And like, if people don't want to hear it, so what? But some people might, you know, and we want to do it. So might as well make it happen.
I wonder if the foundation of routine and being at home could, you know, help you take stock and kind of make your aim true in terms of that.
Yeah, I think there was a combination of, you know, when we took this time away, Josh really focused on becoming a better songwriter. Like he had never really written a song for him to sing. You know what I mean? He's always been with me when we arrange songs. We always arrange songs together, but he started writing his own tunes. And I think that helped give me a boost of confidence because I knew that he was going to be looking at the way I was writing songs differently now. You know, he knew what that kind of weird pressure was to bring lyrics around and like have your lyrics judged by people. And now that he knew what that was all about and he had experience in that, like it made this songwriting process a lot easier and fun for me.
Did you find yourself wanting to impress him?
I definitely got motivated by it, for sure. Yeah, I definitely am like, I was like, okay, especially after we did like one or two songs or two or three songs, you know, then I was like, oh yeah, we know how to do this. Like, let's fucking go. And so we did for the next couple of years. And that's what that's what we got here.
It's so cool to hear you talk about it.
Well, thank you. It's fun. It's fun to talk about. I mean, it's fun to talk about with you and people we know, because it's like, you know, we've known you for a long time, and these are conversations we would be having if we weren't all locked up right now. You know, we would be hanging out somewhere, and
writing songs is the reason why we hang out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge deal to get back into the musical world, because yeah, it's like, I'm talking with you. I'm talking with people I haven't talked to for a long time. And these are special friendships that need to be rekindled from time to time, you know? Yeah. It did suck to like step away for that long and kind of just know what it's like to be out hanging out and having a good time with friends and not doing it. That was, you know, there is both sides of it for sure.
Well, Ty, thanks so much. It's been a really nice chat.
Giles, thank you. This has been awesome. I appreciate it. I've been working all day, bumming my head on the side, running around like a blue ass fly. I've been working, yeah, I've been working all day, bumming my head. Every bleeding minute I've been on the go, up and down the ladder like a fiddler's elbow. I've been working, yeah, I've been working all day, bumming my head. This is a Mighty Moon Media podcast.